Well, welcome back to episode 296 of the In Squash podcast. I'm your host, Jerry Gibson, and it's been an epic past few episodes here on the pod with some fantastic squash stories to flesh out. And today might be the one to top them all, the feel-good story of the year, no doubt. Sivasangari Subramanian, winner of last month's London Squash Classic, is here, and she really stole the show in London. As most of you know, Siva was sidelined for 7 months in June of 2022 following a very serious car accident. And this happened just prior to the Commonwealth Games, of which she was getting ready to participate in. The injury was serious. I believe it was a neck and spine related injury. So clearly she needed time away. Well, she's back now and playing, I believe, her best squash. I'm going to ask her how she feels about that. But we'll be talking about the big win in London, how she's bounced back so well since being sidelined, her mental game alongside the great Jesse Engelbrecht, and hopefully much, much more. Really looking forward to having Siva back on the pod. But before we speak to her, let's speak about Open Squash. We're growing the game and making squash more accessible and more affordable for everyone is the mission. Open Squash sponsors the very best in the game right now, including recent winner of the German Open, world number 6, Gina Kennedy, world number 11, Victor Kwan, world number 92, and moving up, it just seems every episode she moves up in the rankings, world number 92, Hannah Craig, and the very best player in the men's game right now, and a guy who is also one of the great stories of this year, world number 1, Ali Farag. In fact, Ali, along with Harvard head coach Mike Way, have taken on the roles as senior advisors for Open Squash. So that bodes well for them and for us. With summer fast approaching, it's on our doorstep now. You'll want to take a look at the great summer squash camps that are on offer at Open Squash. Really, if you're interested in those, take a look now before spots fill up. The camps will be headed by the aforementioned legendary Harvard head coach, Mike Way, former world number 1 and Drexel head coach, Johnny White, along with Gina, Victor, and several other highly respected coaches, of whom I'm hoping to have on the pod to flesh out exactly what's going on with those camps right now and what they do at Open Squash. Also, Open Squash right now is very excited to be partnering up with American squash court manufacturer Sunrise Courts. Jordan Aldrich and his team at Sunrise will be ready to help you with your squash court needs. Check out the website at sunrise-courts.com and avail yourself of a free court setup estimate. That's sunrise-courts.com. Now, here we go, episode 296 with London Squash Classic winner, world number 13, Siva Subramanian. A long time no see.
Yeah. How are you doing? Are you in Dubai?
I'm in Dubai. Yeah. Yeah. I'm fantastic. It's getting hot here, though.
Yeah. I mean, it is always hot there, isn't it?
I would say it's during the winter. It's like summer in Canada, where I'm from. I'm Canadian. So,
okay.
Canadian summers are like the coldest period here.
Yeah.
But how is everything with you? You're in New York or Philadelphia?
Yeah.
Or?
I'm back in Ithaca, New York. Yeah.
Okay, back with the Cornell
David
team.
Yes,
Great. Oh, it must be fantastic to be back there.
Just to reset and then playing Alguna next. So
yes, that's right. Yeah, Black Ball is going on as we speak, and then so that'll be exciting. Just want to say again, Siv, it's great to have you back on, and really. I'm so happy with the success that you've had recently. I mean, you really started playing well over the last couple of months, 3-4 months, really. But, the London Squash Classic, that's your first ever gold win. You moved up to 13 in the rankings, I think, this month, which is your highest. I think, is it your highest ever?
World ranking? It's my highest.
Yeah. Okay. So now that, as we say, the dust has settled a little bit since London, and I know you've got a lot of, relatively a bit of press because of that win. Now that the dust has settled a bit, how do you feel about everything about that win and how your game is right now?
Yeah, I mean the win is huge. Obviously, you know, to beat all these top players, it's always something, you know, I want to do. I again last year, I think I mentioned in an interview saying that I want to challenge all these players. Like I've been there, you know, before the accident, especially like I've been challenging all these top players, and then all of a sudden, like it was tough to come back. But like you know, like maybe coming towards end of last year, I was playing well again, and I was beating some of these players, Taya, Amina Urfi, you know, all these players at the end of last year. And then yeah, London was really special to me. I think yeah, beating all these, I mean, top four players, you know, it's something I've been working towards, and yeah, I think my hard work has been paying off. And yeah, as you said, the press and stuff, it was just crazy. Like there's a lot of ongoing stuff, but then I tried to, you know, just stay away for a bit because, you know, I still have tournaments coming up. Like it's not like, you know, winning London and it's done, right? I still have Alguna coming up and Worlds, so I just want to try to, you know, reset, refocus, because obviously even for me it's a shock to me to be winning the tournament, and then just to try and like get back and relax a bit. So yeah, it's great. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess with squash, anyways, we don't see a lot of media coverage, right? But when it does happen, and I think it did happen to you to a even greater degree than even some of the better players in the world, it must be you got to kind of say to yourself, okay, I don't get carried away. Is that kind of what you're getting at?
Yeah, I mean, I always try to just not get as carried away with all this media stuff, and I also think it became really big because, you know, no one has ever really done it since Nicole, you know, so I think it blew up, and since squash is also in the Olympics now, so everyone's looking into squash as well, so it's a great thing. Like, you know, there's always support back home. Like there's always people wanting you to do well, but sometimes for me it kind of gets a bit too much in terms of maybe pressure or like, you know, all these kind of things. So I try to put that aside as much as I can.
Yeah, I guess, and I guess it's nice to have your base there in New York with David. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that. I mean, he's a kind of guy too. He probably knows how to sort of set aside all the distractions and really focus on what you need to do in terms of your training. He's that kind of guy, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've been in Cornell for I graduated last year, so I've been in this place for almost like 5 years now, and it's good that I'm used to this place. Like even though it's very quiet and it's away from the city, I like it because I'm that type of person. I think I don't like to be in the city as much and have too much distractions and stuff like that. So it's a good place to be. It's always like, especially during season, you know, you're traveling almost every 2 weeks, and it's always, you know, you're going to a city and playing some squash, so it's always nice to come back and just like again reset and just be by myself and just train. Yeah.
Awesome. Let's talk a little bit about London. Now, the semifinal against Nayla, you went up 2-1, and then you had a long fourth game, which she won. And then obviously we all know Nayla. She's super, super fit, and she's really worked really hard on her game. And look at what she's done. She's number four in the world. I don't think many people would have picked her to get that far. So she's just a great example of, you know, what you can do. But heading into that fifth game, how were you feeling physically, and did you know that you had enough in the gas tank, I guess you could say, to match her and just play your game?
Yeah, I mean, I played Nella a couple of times before London, and I know whenever I play her, I'm going in and it's gonna be a long match, right? Like there's no way you're gonna like chop balls and like gonna win in like 30 minutes even, you know. So I think with her, even before going into the match, I was just trying to, you know, focus my game and just focus on each point rather than focusing on the finish line. So yeah, in the fourth I had some match balls, and yeah, I didn't win the set, which was annoying, but I tried to just quickly put that aside, and you know, it's a new set, new game. I was even 8-5 down the fifth actually, but I just tried to, you know, play point by point, and yeah, as you said, she picks up every ball, she's really fit. And to be honest, I didn't feel fatigue or tired, which was good.
You didn't look it,
Normally when
that's
I
for sure.
No, yeah, normally when I play her, I kind of feel it a bit, but maybe it was more of the mental side that I'm, you know, like I try to change my mental, like view towards playing her in terms of like not looking ahead too much, you know. So maybe that just kind of saved my energy a bit. Yeah, I wasn't too tired. And yeah, it's always tough playing her, right? Like it's a 94 minutes battle, so it's always good to come on top.
Yeah, I get for her maybe. I mean, I could be wrong here, but to go up against someone like you, obviously you're very fit right now, and maybe for her, you know, you're matching her. Maybe even you know your length or your short game, your attacking squash might be more of an advantage to you in that side. So maybe it was a bit discouraging for her to see just how strong and how fit you were at that point in the match when it was 8-5 that you weren't going anywhere.
Yeah, for me, I told myself, you know, I've got nothing to lose. Like, you know, I beat Shvini in the quarters, so now I'm in the semis. Like, I have nothing to lose. Why not just give my all? Like, if it works out, it's great. So if it doesn't, it's fine. You've given your best. So for me, it's just like I wanted to stay in each rally as long as I can, and just, you know, if she wants to play a 50 shot rally, I don't mind. Like, I'm not gonna say, oh, I'm gonna make a mistake and, you know, let you win the point. So I think that kind of mentally kind of maybe let her down a bit. And also, like, with my short game, tried to move the ball a bit and, you know, disturb her movement. I think that also kind of bothered her, which, yeah, I mean, gave me some confidence. And yeah, it was good. Yeah.
Yeah, I forgot about the quarters. You did beat the number one player in the world in the quarters. I just sort of skipped over that. Why did I do that? But yeah, I mean, having won that match and then you know winning the next match and then going up against Hanya in the final. Now Hanya, I guess maybe a lot of people might not know this, but you've had reasonable success against her. You've taken games from her. You beat her in 2017, and she was playing really good squash even, you know, back then. So I guess obviously she's playing much, you know, better now, but you're playing better too. So like going into that final, were you confident, despite the difference in the rankings and things like that?
Yeah, I mean, I've had some close matches with Hanya. Obviously, like I beat her once, but the ones which I lost, it was always like 3-1, or like, you know, there are sets where I'm leading and I lose a set and things like that. So I always knew I was there. Again, as I said, like the breakthrough, it was just not clicking. I was not consistent enough and throughout the whole match. So I think with Hanya again, like I went in with nothing to lose. I knew there was a lot of pressure on her, and because, you know, someone different. It's not Shabini or Goha again the finals, right? So it's definitely like at the back of my mind, there's always some pressure, because I know when I play a lower seed, there's pressure, right? So I just wanted to take full advantage of that and try to just go in and do my best. And yeah, it was great. Like I knew, like, it's not, I've beaten Shabini and Ella, so like it's not impossible to be, you know, beating another person. So it was, yeah, I just tried to go in with a good mindset, and yeah.
You're talking about a lot about mindset, and obviously you have Jesse Engelbrecht. He's the mindset guru. He's the guy. I've spoken to him a number of times, and you know this really well, how you know tremendous he is with the mental game, and he obviously knows his squash as well. But during to have him in your corner that week, and I guess he's been with you for a little while now. Just wondering, you know, especially in those fifth games, what sorts of things is he trying to sort of remind you of or trying to make you be aware of before heading into that big final game where maybe you feel a bit of pressure?
Yeah, I mean, I've been working with him, I think maybe since the beginning of the season. So we've worked a lot, and I think he's helped me out a lot, especially in my anger issues, and also the pressure I needed to handle coming back from an accident, you know. And I put too much pressure on myself, and there's just like a lot of ongoing stuff that wasn't helping my game. So yeah, during the tournament, I think overall with him, like, he was just wanting me to live the moment. Like, you don't have to see anything else. Like, you know, even the fifth game, like if I'm losing in a match ball in the fourth, and then going into the fifth game, just put the fourth aside and try to reset in the fifth. And that's what he's been telling me to do. And yeah, it worked out really well.
Previously, I mean, you mentioned You have anger issues. Only you would know that. I mean, obviously, we see players, they get emotional on court, but you know yourself if you're, your anger is heightened at a certain point or certain degree, and you admitted to that. But how has Jesse helped you overcome those things? Because I just watched this incredible Netflix series, and it was about golf, and there were two, they focused on two golfers. One who decided to work with a mental coach and deal with his anger issues, and then the other who refused to. And they both went in opposite directions. The one who worked with the mental coach ended up winning one of the biggest tournaments in golf. The other one continued to go downward.
I think with me, especially after the accident, like I really wanted to come back and, play the level where I was playing before it happened. So with that, like I was putting too much pressure on myself, and if things don't work out, I would get like I couldn't control my emotions, and like and yeah, I knew I needed to speak to someone about it because it wasn't going too well, especially during training. During matches, I don't show as much, so it's mostly only during training. So David knows everything about it, but yeah, I linked up with Jesse, asked him for like some help, and ever since then, it's been going great. He's been helping me out with certain tools that he has, breathing, and all these things. So yeah, it's been going great. Yeah.
Awesome. Now I wanted to just ask you. I know most of the squash world knows about what happened with your car accident, and we were all really worried at that time. And thankfully, you've come out of it better. But at the time, it was I believe a neck injury or a spine related injury, the upper part of your spine. So what was the extent of the injury for those who might not know the extent of it? And sort of how long was it until you could actually get back on court and do some squash or some training?
Yeah, so I had a C1 fracture, which is the bone that's right on top of your neck. It's close to the spine, so it was pretty dangerous. And I decided to not do the surgery there because if I did, like, I would have limited rotation. So then I had to just be in a brace for like 2 to 3 months. I was in a neck brace, and after that, it was just more of I was just waiting for the bone to fuse and heal, and then I was just doing rehab of mobilizing the neck and moving it again. I didn't have much range, and it was tough at that point because that's when I knew my neck was very important because I couldn't even turn, like I was just like turning very little, so I had to turn my whole body to talk to somebody and things like that. So I think that I step on court maybe like and like after 5 to 6 months, but even then it was just like light hitting. I couldn't turn. With squash, you need so much rotation from your shoulder to your neck, so much of turning, quick reaction. So yeah, I think even when I came back, I wasn't 100% at all. I was just eager to hit the ball, so I was just like, whatever, I'll do some solo and things like that. But yeah, that was a timeline, and then I came to college in January for my last semester. I played for Cornell, obviously, but still, again, I don't think I was 100% till maybe 9 to 12 months later. Yeah.
So it must have been challenging for you at that time. Maybe that heightened your anger issues even more, right? Because it must have been extremely frustrating. But now you appear to be, just you're playing your best squash. And you mentioned earlier before the accident, you felt you were playing your best squash. But now that you're here and you've won this gold event, you've beaten Sherbini, you've beaten Hanya, you've beaten Nayla, you've won that gold event. Do you think this time away has helped your game sort of in a way?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I believe everything happens for a reason. I guess maybe that accident was for me to take a break, or I don't know. I believe things happen for a reason. So Now I'm also seeing the game in a different way, you know, like maybe before this, I was taking it for granted, like, oh, like, so like I don't like to play this even when I'm losing, or like, you know, all these things. But now I'm looking more into like, oh, you know, life is very short, like, you know, why are you taking it for granted and things like that. So I'm going in with a different view, and I think I'm enjoying it more because I'm just trying to live the moment. And yeah, it's something that me and Jesse has been working as well, in terms of trying to just live the moment and, you know, don't think ahead or don't think the past. And I guess that makes me enjoy squash even more.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, you're definitely. I watching you play in the past, I always thought that it looked like you had the ability to get to the very highest level, but something was keeping you back. But the last couple of events have really, you've shown your real game there. So, I just wanted to ask you though, in the Optasia event, another I think a friend of yours or someone you grew up playing squash with. I spoke to her a couple of weeks ago, Satomi Watanabe. She ended up winning, and I think you know her well. She mentioned on the podcast that when she moved to Malaysia from Japan, that she had played you like about 50 times, and she might have won twice. But you must have been extremely happy to see the success that she had in Optasia. So, what did you think of her win in Optasia? And are you at all surprised that she's now contending at the top of the game as well?
Yeah, I'm not surprised at all. Like, again, like, we grew up, we're the same age. I think we have like our birthdays are super close to each other, and like we play every tournament together. Again, she was in Malaysia for a long, long time, so we play a lot of junior tournaments together. I play in so many finals with her, and it's honestly very great to see her doing well. You know, in Japan, like, there's not much players coming up, so it's good to even see her breaking into the top 20 and like winning tournaments. You know, everyone wants to do it. She's been working really hard, and I'm just very happy to see her doing well. And you know, hopefully we both can keep the Asian flag, you know, high, and
Yeah.
keep doing well in the tour. Yeah.
Yeah, it's exciting, especially with the world teams coming up. Asia, they're being held in Hong Kong, and that'll be amazing. Maybe it'll be a Malaysia Japan women's semifinal.
Hopefully.
That'd be great. Just wondering though, with your success with Satomi, Gina Kennedy just won in Germany, and she's been really playing great squash. We look at the top of the game, and we always, people always say it's always Gohar, Hamami, and Sherbini, but you guys and others are making inroads there. So, how excited are you about the perhaps maybe a change of the landscape at the top of the women's game?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you always see the same people again, as you said, in the semis and finals. So it's good to see. You know, obviously it's not easy at all to play all these top players. Like, they're super fit, super talented, you know, they're there for a reason, right? So, but to be seeing all this, maybe like the 5 to 10 range of players, like top 5 to top 10 players challenging the highest rank, it's good to see. Like, you know, we're getting closer, we're closing the gap. And yeah, I think it's good to have some switch in the tournaments. And I think I'm glad to see different names out there, you know, like it's always nice.
Yeah, it's refreshing, isn't it? There were a couple of things I wanted to ask you before. I have a couple more things I wanted to ask you about Malaysian squash, but just in terms of on tour, obviously there's been a big change up until the semifinals. It's best of three now, I believe. How does that, in your opinion, does that give you an advantage or in some way or not?
So London was my first time playing the best of three format. So when I played Katie Mirelief the first round, to be honest, I was a bit nervous just because of the format, because you know you're going in and you need to start well, and you need to, you know, get it going from the first point itself, because you know it, in a blink, like, the first set would be going off early, right? So like for me, I was just like, I was a bit nervous. But I think as the time went on, I think I kind of liked the best of three format, then going into the semis and finals with best of five. But I don't know, maybe they should definitely mix it up, you know, not just do it best of three or best of five, because I guess a lot of players are also super fit, and I guess a lot of the top players are training to be playing five sets, right? So like, why are you know, putting down to best of three and making it shorter for when everyone's working really hard? So I guess a mix of both would be good for tournaments for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm assuming they're doing this in order to lay the groundwork for the Olympics, because I'm thinking that that's what's going to happen there, best of threes until the semis. But I guess that's good for you in a way. I mean, you were relatively fresh, I guess, to go in and play two long five set matches there in the semis and the finals.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was very fresh. I think the first and second round, the best of three was good for me. I think I obviously, like, I guess best of three, you tend to like finish the match in maybe 30 to 45 minutes for the women's game. So it's a good way. I think again, like, this is my first time playing the best of three format, and I think I liked it. Yeah.
Awesome. Another thing I wanted to ask you, there were a few moments. I think it was, I think in the Nayla match, maybe even in the Hanya match, where you had to speak to the referee. You questioned a few calls. Now, normally those conversations can go on for a little bit, but nowadays they seem to be just stopping you as soon as you ask for the let. Or you, do you think that's a good move, or would you rather have the ability to sort of ask why, or you know, give your side of the story, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, I can see why they're doing that, but also I feel like sometimes they're a bit too much. Like, if you can't even have a single word with the referee, I feel there's too much power on the referee, you know. But I guess it's okay to ask why, and you know, ask your opinion on why you're giving the decision, so that the next point you won't repeat the same thing. But I guess if you're not even given an explanation to your decision, I don't think that's right. But also, I know a lot of players that would have a whole, like, a long conversation with the referee, right? Which is also a waste of time. I guess they should. I guess asking why is fine, but other than that, yeah, other than that, it's fine to not really have a conversation with the referee. Yeah.
To me anyways, I think as long as you're not being disrespectful and taking, you know, a very long con making it into this long exchange with the referee, be become as soon as they give their decision and maybe you ask one question, that's enough. But
Yeah.
the disrespectful part is the part I think they're trying to address, maybe.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. Now, back in Malaysia, and I think I've met Aaron before, but Aaron Zoysa, he's sort of the name that everyone talks about when it comes to Squash Malaysia and development of juniors over the years. And obviously you might know him very, very well. I'm just wondering, you know, over the years, especially now, I mean, Malaysia has had tremendous success both in the men's and women's game. Just wanted to speak to what impact he's had on you and on Malaysian squash.
To be honest, I've never really, I'm not really as close to Aaron, because he's always been based in Penang.
Okay.
You know, he's the coach of Lo Wee Wern, who's also made Malaysia squash great. You know, she broke in the top 10, and with so much of injuries also, like, she's pushing so hard. And you know, but I've met Aaron many times, obviously in tournaments, junior tournaments, and also like nationals and stuff like that. And again, he has a very different type of view towards the game. Yeah, I mean, he's developed a lot of kids coming up, especially from Penang. Satomi also worked with him when she was younger, so it's great to see. You know, like, obviously we want to see more of it coming. So yeah, I'm not super close to him in terms of working with him in squash, so because I can't say much either. So.
Right, yeah. But someone also, Nicole David, came out just that you probably saw the comments that she had for you. She was so proud of what you accomplished, and she thinks there's even greater things are going to lie ahead for you. So, just what did those words mean to you? And also, I guess as a Malaysian female, what sort of impact did she have on you growing up as a squash player? Because she's one of the greatest of all time.
Yeah, I mean, I when I started squash, obviously I look up to her. She was already the legend, right, in the sport. So, to be hearing those words from her, obviously it means a lot to me. It definitely boosts my confidence, motivates me to do better. Obviously, whatever she has achieved is she's achieved so many things that, she set the bar so high. And yeah, obviously it's very tough to achieve what she has achieved, but I think everyone's unique in their own way. So she's already the legend of the game, and yeah, hopefully I can achieve maybe half of what she's achieved, and yeah,
Yeah.
too good, yeah.
She's someone too. Apparently she like changed her whole game. Like she changed her grip or did something like dramatic in order to take her squash to the next level. I guess you know about that. So just wondering what you think about. I mean, she's that's a great example of someone who's willing to sacrifice. You know, what she knows about the game for something that might be better for her going forward. Is that something that you always now being having been what you've been through, is that
Yeah.
something you take into consideration as well?
Yeah, I'm sure, as I think as an athlete generally, like you have to sacrifice a lot of things, I think it comes in with whatever you're doing. She moved to Amsterdam when she was super young as well after high school. So yeah, for me, I think there's always going to be moments where you got to get out of your comfort zone and try to, live in that zone for a bit, and so that you can get better. And I think if you're not willing to get out of comfort zone, that's when it's tough, because you don't want to see any improvement or you don't want to see any changes. It's always good to have some changes. If it doesn't work out, it's okay. Like you can go back to whichever path you were taking, or but if it's working out, then why not? Like you have to push through it and sacrifice a lot of things. And yeah, I've seen a couple of things, a couple of changes I've did in my game as well. And yeah, there were times where I'm like, oh damn, this is so hard, but like it is going to be worth it in a couple of months, right? So yeah, I think it is worth it to take some changes and sacrifices. Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah. Speaking of sacrifices, I mean, it's at what, 8 a.m. there in New York now. So
Yeah.
you're up bright and early. Have you had your coffee? Have you had your breakfast? You must be heading out now for a bit of training, are you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really a coffee person. Caffeine doesn't work on me, so
Well, okay.
I'll have I do drink coffee at times just for the taste, but yeah, I'm gonna have some breakfast after this, and then I'll just head for training.
Head for training with David, yeah?
Yeah, with David, yeah.
All right. Well, fantastic. Siva, again, super, really well done there in London, and keep up the great work. All the best in Elgo. You're playing a Hamami right away, aren't you? Okay. So you'll know she'll be out for a bit of revenge. So you've got that to spur you on, right? All
Yeah, for sure.
right. Take care, Siva, and really appreciate your time today.
Thank you.